Did you know that you can be a critically thinking, rational person and be a Christian? Did you know that there's good evidence that Christianity is true? Did you know that the Christian faith can withstand the toughest of scrutiny? Welcome to the Cerebral Faith Podcast, where we believe because of the brains God gave us and not in spite of them. I'm your host, Evan Minton. Podcast where we use the brains that God gave us. Today, we are going to be talking about Christianity and video games and the relationship between them. I have here on the podcast my guest and good friend Nick Peters. He blogs at Deeper Waters, and he also is the host of the Deeper Waters podcast. He has done a talk on Christianity and video games and the relationship between them, and like myself, he is an avid gamer. We both like to play video games. I'm a big Nintendo fanboy. I play, you know, Pokemon, Mario, Zelda, that stuff. I played PlayStation and Xbox a good bit when I was a kid, but mostly it's just like 99.99% Nintendo now. So I want you to say hello to Nick Peters. Nick Peters, hi, how are you doing?
Hello to Nick Peters. Hi, how are you doing?
And by the way, I affirm the virgin birth. Do you affirm the virgin birth?
I do indeed affirm the virgin birth.
Oh, that's good, because I would hate for people to think that I had a heretic promoting heresy on the podcast by not affirming the virgin birth. So, what is your history with Christianity and video games? What made you decide to want to start a YouTube channel on this very topic?
Yeah, my YouTube channel is called Gaming Theologian. I haven't got to make a video in a while because of circumstances beyond my control. I really want to get back out there and do one again. We're working on getting that done as soon as possible. But I grew up in a Christian home, in a conservative home, and I became a Christian at 11, but my history with video games starts earlier. It starts with coming home from kindergarten one day, seeing something under the TV and asking, what's that? And I was told it was called a ColecoVision. And that's where it all started. Because if you know anything about kids that are that young, they're usually really good at video games. And my dad had thought he was hot stuff at these games until I came along. And then that changed everything. My favorite game on there was called Ladybug, like a Pac-Man sort of game. And I could get to level 100 on there very easily. And I didn't even have a pause button back then, so that tells you how difficult it was.
Oh, wow.
And honestly, Dave, if I saw it on, say, the Nintendo eShop, it'd be immediately, shut up and take my money! Because I'd want to get that as soon as possible. Got Nintendo at age 8. And growing up, my life was video games and Christianity together. And I went to Bible college when I graduated from college. I went to a seminary. And I got married in seminary, and unfortunately I got divorced a couple of years ago, not by my choice at all. I did most everything I could to try and save it. But after I decided I wanted to get my master's and came back, I decided to go to New Orleans Baptist, which is where I'm at right now. And last December I talked with Dr. Bob Stewart here. I don't remember what it was, but I'd wanted to speak with him about something. And then he said, Nick, I'm surprised you didn't sign up for the Fin to speak. I didn't know that was an option. I said, yes, you can. And, you know, we've got the slots filled up. But tell you what, if you go ahead and you apply, and if someone drops out, I'll put you in there. Just give me the top three topics you want to talk about. I thought, what could I talk about? Because But, you know, everyone talks about the same kinds of things at these conferences. And, like, Gary Habermas is going to be here. And it comes, if it comes between listening to me talk about the resurrection or listening to Gary Habermas talk about the resurrection, heck, I'd go hear Gary Habermas talk about the resurrection instead. So I thought, what can I do that would be different? And then I decided video games and Christianity. My other choices were divorce and Christianity, which I submitted, and autism and Christianity. Since, like you, I'm on the spectrum as well. And so he sent me back an email and said, you're up, video games and Christianity. So I started doing some more digging into the topic than I had before, and I thought, well, when I get here, I'm going to be talking about violence and sexism and questions like that. Those were footnotes at the end of my talk, because I found so much more. And the day of my talk, I remember wondering, is anyone even going to want to hear this? Will anyone really care? I was in a small room for a breakout session, like all breakout sessions are, and we had to bring in extra chairs because so many people wanted to hear it. And we had both sexes in there, all ages. And when I give a talk, at the end of my talks, I always leave time for Q&A. So usually it's someone raises a question, you answer, next question, you answer, next question, you answer. But that didn't happen this time. Instead, an organic discussion broke out among the audience. I could have left the room and everything would have been just fine. And it occurred to me then, yes, this is definitely something that needs more research. And as for my gaming things, I definitely do some Nintendo quite a bit, but I also do PlayStation and playing on my phone as well, but PlayStation mainly because of Final Fantasy. I'm a big RPG-er, and Final Fantasy 14, I play that on PlayStation. My name's Phoenix Skywing on there if anyone's interested.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I've been gaming since about as not as long as you, but I started about the same age as you were when you started. My first system was the Nintendo 64. Our first gaming systems reveals our ages very, very much. I'm just a kid. I just turned 31. This is a footnote, but I look like a kid, and a lot of people think I look like a kid. And there was this one guy who invited me to his youth group, and
I look like I'm in my 20s and I'm 42 years old.
Yeah. And there's an interesting video on, like, physical traits of autistic people, and one of them is looking younger. That was like, But, Hot Wheels, it was a Hot Wheels game. I can't remember the exact name of it, but that was my first one. That was the one that got me hooked.
I'm going through Animal Crossing. And, of course, Tears of a Kingdom, the latest Zelda game, the same franchise that brought you the Dancing Dragon Dungeon.
Yes, for listeners who don't know, I played The Legend of Zelda Oracle of Seasons back in, like, 2019, and I had a lot of trouble with the Dancing Dragon Dungeons, and Nick is just never going to let me live it down. So, here, people tend to think video games are just for kids. It's a kid thing. But there are a lot of adults who play video games, too. A lot of adults. Why do you think that is?
I think games, and let's not just start with video games. Let's start with just games, period. What's one of the biggest franchises of entertainment out there in our world today? Professional sports. What are sports? Games, essentially. I mean, baseball is a game, football is a game. All these are games that we do. And our world is increasingly getting involved with games. If you do it, go with any sort of program at a store and we say, you know, if you spend this much money, you get this many points. You're essentially playing a game there. Games really get to our love of challenge, of quest. We want to know that we're doing something. We want to know that we can rise above. I mean, many of us, we get tired of our jobs sometimes because it seems like we go and we do the same old thing. A challenge always gives you something new, something to shoot at. Now, of course, if all you do is stay at those challenges and you never bring it into the world, that's a problem. But I think many of us who are gamers and grow up facing challenges with that, we do bring that into the world. We do make that our attitude. I think G.K. Chesterton would be quite pleased with so much what we have going on because he, I think, would always insist he was a big kid. So would C.S. Lewis. And they loved their fairy stories, everything. And they saw the world as a story. Because of that, I think we should see the world as a quest.
Yeah, so it really gets at the psyche. Like we want to know that we are, you know, doing something and we are achieving something.
Yep. And for many of us who can't do sports, this is one area that we can do something in. And I was talking with Tara Anderson here, I was telling him about my PhD path because I'd like to do a PhD on this. And one thing I said to him is, look, we are getting in a more technological age, and even in the military, we're going to be using drones a lot more. Guess who's going to be piloting those drones? It's going to be people like us, the nerds.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely resonate with that. Like, you know, my number one favorite gaming franchise of all time is Pokemon. That should come as a surprise to no one. And I often like to compare my Pokemon journey to Ash Ketchum of the Pokemon anime, who just recently left and got replaced. But I sucked at Pokemon when I first got started. Like, I struggled with every gym leader. I was one of those kids who didn't care about moves that did no damage, and I didn't understand what it even meant for the defense to drop, to rise or to drop. I'm like, it seems like I'm still taking just as much damage. And so I never won a Pokemon League until I played Pokemon Diamond when I was 15, and I've been playing Pokemon since I was 6 years old. And incidentally, I beat Cynthia, everyone agrees that Cynthia is the most difficult champion, like even to this day. And that was the first champion I ever beat. And I remember just feeling so proud of myself. I just had a little celebration in my room. It came down to the wire. Dialga was my last Pokemon and he was in the red and he took out her Garchomp with one roar of time. But then I was like, well, I won a Pokemon League. What else can I do? And Pokemon Platinum came out, and there was this thing called a Battle Frontier. And I was like, okay, I'll go collect these symbols. Could not do it. Maybe I'll conquer the Battle Subway in Black and White. Could not do it. What about the Battle Mazon in X and Y, Kalos? Nope. The Battle Tree in Alola? I got up to 40 wins in Super Singles, but I could not get the wins needed to get those stamps on my trainer card. Then in Galar in Pokemon Sword, I finally did it. And then I went on to do online ranked competitive battles, and I went up the Poke class, Great class, Ultra class, Master class, and I went up pretty high in the Master Ball tier. And then I stopped. That is probably my greatest achievement in video games currently. Yeah, it brings a lot of satisfaction because you put in a lot of work. Because it's a lot of work raising these Pokemon, getting their movesets and their stats and IVs and EVs just right. And sometimes the team looks good on paper, but it's really not. And so, yeah, everything you just said, I really resonate with that.
And while you're doing that, you're learning discipline. as well. You're learning thinking skills. You're learning memorization. When I took my Greek class my first semester here, where I had two semesters, it was during my second semester, and I had a program I'd had in the past that I used to teach myself a lot of Greek, and it was done with, like, here's this word, here's a list of words over here, can you translate? You'd have to click on the correct answers, or can you click the nominative plural form of this? Things like that over and over. And I remember taking a test, and when you had to write it down and fill it in, I couldn't do it as well. And my professor and I, we got along great. So after class, when it was done, I went to his office, and I waited for him. He came in to see me, and I opened up the program and said, let me show you this. And I brought up the exact kind of thing we studied. I click, 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 click. Kept getting all the answers correct. For the most part, I got, I think, 90%. He said, okay, I think I see what you're saying here. And he told me, he said, I think tests are the best way to learn things. I said, no, tests are not the best way to learn things. Anyone who goes through school knows this. You study for a test, you take the test, and after a test, you forget it all. You don't remember it long term at all. And to test this, to test this via your mind, I am in the name of science and education and research, decide to play through the original Legend of Zelda and Link to the Past, both quests of the original Legend of Zelda on the Nintendo Switch Online program, games I hadn't played for at least 2 or 3 years. See if I could find where everything was. Do everything, get all the hearts. Yep, still could. Everything. I never took a test on those. I never sat down with books and said, he's like, I have memorized all this Zelda information. I just did it, and over time, I learned it. And we all know things we could do. With that, I could sit down and play many of the Mega Man games and know immediately, okay, this weapon works on this guy, and this one works on this guy. Games do that for you. Games are a great educator.
Yeah. So, speaking of adults playing video games, I was looking for a specific quote from a specific someone, but in doing a search on Facebook, I didn't find the quote, but I found a status which pretty much says the same thing. And I'd like to get your thoughts on it. Here's what it says. It's by a person named Jason Storms. The post is public, so, you know, no breach of privacy there. He says, quote, "What is up with grown men and video games? I mean, I know they're fun. I played thousands of hours growing up, but I grew up. I put away childish things. And as a Christian man especially, you recognize adulthood calls you to greater things. Men, listen, there are evil people that want to destroy everything you have, that seek the destruction of your family, your children, and your nation. What are you doing about it? Video games emasculate and distract you from the real war. To me, they are boring and lame. There is real, meaningful, and exciting work to do. And I can assure you, from talking to hundreds of women about this, grown men playing video games is very, all caps, unattracted. The world needs men, strong men, responsible men, sacrificial men. Be a man. It's much more rewarding." And then he quotes 1 Corinthians 13:11, the Apostle Paul. "When I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put away childish things. Hashtag restoring manhood." End quote.
It's always easy to win the game when you declare what the end result is, and then declare yourself a winner for having reached that result. Now, there are a lot of things that I actually do agree with. Yes, we need to be doing something out there in the real world. Yes, the family is under assault. Yes, we need real men to rise up. I have no problem with manhood. But as I'm hearing this, I'm thinking, so what about professional sports? And that parallel keeps coming up over and over. And how many women are out there who would say they are sports widows because their husbands can't stop watching sports? When I when I lived in Tennessee, we used to have a sports radio show every weekday on radio, 3 hours talking about sports. I wonder, what could you talk about for 3 hours? You have whole channels dedicated to sports. And yet, no one seems to bat an eye at that one, because that one is the socially acceptable one. I have also did some looking here once, because I've heard so many times, and I looked up to see if I could find any research that indicates that women do not like men who are gamers. I couldn't find it. I looked, I couldn't find it. In fact, generally nearly 50% of both sexes are gamers. And with VR coming and phones now where we can carry around games, more and more people are playing games. Now, if this guy wants to say it's emasculating, I 100% disagree with that one. If anything, my gaming has got me more wanting to do something out of the world, because you can't just sit down behind a screen and save the world numerous times virtually without thinking, gosh, I'm glad I don't have to go out there in the real world and do anything. No, when I'm out there in the world, I want to do things just as much. I mean, talk to my family, they tell you if I see someone in need, I want to do something to help them. When I started going through my divorce, this is the analogy I kind of used as well, because I said, you know what? This life is my game, and I could sit down here and be a victim, or I could get up and do something. Now, I'm not denying there's a time to mourn. There is. If I never mourned what happened in my divorce, that would not be healthy. I still mourn it to this day. But I also decide I didn't want to be a victim. I'm going to play to win. And when my divorce care leader was talking to my parents about my wanting to go to New Orleans, he said he has been playing those games all his life. Now he wants to go out there and live them. And that's exactly what I see myself doing, going on the adventure. Yes, we need real men out there. And I have a love of adventure built into me from playing games all my life. And I don't think you can get that from professional sports, honestly. And as for the whole childish things, Paul's talking about a way of thinking. Remember C.S. Lewis said, I put away childish things, including the fear of being childish. And I read the fairy tales now openly at 50 years old. And are we going to say, yeah, he's being emasculated, reading those darn children's books at 50? I mean, I've got right here my Kindle, and I'm going through 11 or 12 books right now on there. I read a chapter of each of them every day as much as I can. Sometimes I don't get them all in my go, but I go through them still. I've been doing my schoolwork here, keeping everything up faithfully. I go to my job, I work my job, and when I'm done, I play video games. And even while I'm playing video games, I've got my ECHO right next to me, which is in the same room, so I'm not saying the name of it. I can watch YouTube videos and educate myself. Sometimes I watch something fun as well, but I'm still constantly learning. I'm thinking right now in conclusion of this, something my therapist told me, he said, an idol is always what the other person is interested in.
Yeah, that is a good point. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, if it's just a hobby, if it doesn't interfere with your adult responsibilities and the things you have to do, and it's just something that you enjoy on the side, what's the problem with that? Yep. Other people, like you said, I mean, they're into sports. They're into football or baseball or if you're in the minority, soccer, unless you're over in Great Britain and then you're not in the minority. Yeah, it's just like I don't really get why people – want to bash that. I mean, if it becomes a problem, if it becomes like intrusive, but then like you said, that could be anything. You know, that that even sports have done that to your people and created the sports widows.
Your job can be intrusive. Heck, religion can be intrusive as well. I mean, Jesus spoke about the Pharisees who said that whatever I would have given to you, my parents, I dedicate as a gift to God. And Jesus said, no, that's wrong. You're breaking the commandment by doing that. And ultimately, comments like what this guy is saying, they don't really help because it goes to nerds like ourselves who do have a strong interest and says, ultimately, unless you change your interest and change your life, you're being a loser, you're not being a man, and no girl is ever going to love you.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, this basically has really strong boomer / jock energy to it. Be a man, throw a ball once in a while.
I do have a therapist here also that I see in person who helps me with working on social skills, being on the spectrum, especially since I do want to remarry someday. And so that's me going. She's told me, says, yeah, you don't need to give up games. You can be loved just as you are. That's a message guys need to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Now, moving on to our next point. In your talk at Defend, you argued that we should treat life like a game. And you kind of alluded to that already in your response to the previous question about this guy's post. But could you explain exactly what you mean by that? Kind of go into more detail about that?
Yes. The main idea comes from a book called Life is a Game. Very difficult to memorize the title, obviously. I think it's by Edward Castronova. He's a Catholic, and I think he is in game design. Anyway, he says that we should picture life as a series of quests. And if we have the right mindset, and if we play according to the rules of the game by the game designer, the game will work a lot better for us, and we'll have the proper goal that we need to reach. We need to decide what steps we're taking that will help with the quest and what steps we're taking that won't. And when we play games, we play them ultimately with the goal to win them. We want to be the best that we can. Why not treat life that way? Be the best that we can at life. Like I said, I'm in therapy session over here, and I had to switch therapists because my first one had to travel several hours to get to see me, and that wasn't conducive. But one thing he did say is, okay, Nick, here's your real quest here. The real reason I was in therapy, he said, now what are your side quests at the bottom that can help you with this quest step by step? And that's the way we worked on it, and it really resonates. I mean, I really encourage people to read Life as a Game. If you see your life as an adventure, as a quest, and you have a goal in mind, something greater beyond yourself you want to do, such as serving the kingdom of God, then that makes it more worthwhile. I really don't think we should see heaven as the goal of a game, because I meet too many people who are like that, and they do their evangelism, and they all make about getting to heaven. Well, geez, if you go up to someone who's in their 20s and ask, do you want to go to heaven when you die? Odds are that's not going to be for about 50 or 60 years. And what about all that space in between? I mean, yes, we do go to heaven, but we're also meant to be doing something here on Earth. I've compared it to if you play, say, one of the Zelda games traditionally, and you start off, you've just got 3 hearts. It would be absolute suicide in many cases to go and say, well, I'm going to go off and face against Ganon and defeat the evil right now. No. You do keep in mind the princess that you want to save, but you do keep in mind you have to do several individual quests on the way. And as you go, you become a man who is worthy of saving the princess at the end. So as we go on our journey, if we're going to say heaven is go, fine. Live in such a way that you become a person fit to live in heaven.
Yeah, that's, I think that, What is the name of that book that you referenced?
Life is a Game.
And who is the author again?
Edward Castronova.
Okay, I will include a link to that book in the description below for people who want to check it out. I think that is that does seem like a very good mindset, and I've been trying to think that way as I'm about to go off on my quest to pursue an academic career, to think of, and I'm a homeschool kid. I don't know anything. I don't know the first thing about college, but like in a game, like in an RPG, what do you do if you don't know what to do and how to reach the next goal? You run around and you talk to a bunch of NPCs and they will give you information. And so I've been talking to people like you and yep. Noah Edmonds, and I might give Tim Stratton a call here at some point. And along the way, as I am figuring out how to get from step to step to step to step to get to the final boss, and and then even to defeat the final boss. Because if I treat, like, say, getting a PhD in New Testament like becoming a master ranked Pokemon trainer, mm-hmm. I think that's going to increase my chances of achieving my goal significantly.
Yep.
So I don't know if you know about this. You probably do. But there's a first person or virtual reality game called I Am Jesus Christ. And as the name suggests, you play through the game as Jesus Christ. It's a virtual reality game. What are your thoughts on this game? Is it blasphemous? Have you played it? Have you looked at some playthroughs on like Twitch or YouTube or something?
I haven't played it and I haven't looked at playthroughs, but to me, if it's not blasphemous, I fear it could become awfully close. Because we can't begin to understand like how the mind of Jesus works, someone fully God and fully man. And is it possible for Jesus to lose in that situation? That's what concerns me. I'm not saying that the makers have sinister intentions or anything like that. They could be very well-meaning people, but I am concerned when I hear the title. Now, maybe someone can go off and play it and say, here's what it's really like. Oh, okay, then I can change my mind. But I am concerned. I'm not telling anyone don't play this or anything like that. I'm saying be cautious. But honestly, that applies to most any game. Anything out there, you have to be cautious and know what's going on. There are games that, for instance, I could play, you could play, but we probably wouldn't want small children playing them at the same time. That's the same that applies to movies, books, anything else.
Yeah, I'm kind of uncomfortable about the fact that you play as Jesus Christ too. Yeah. If you played as like one of the apostles, like Matthew or something, you know, then that'd be a little bit different. But like playing as God incarnate, that's just like that just doesn't feel right. There is another video game. I can't remember what it's called. It's currently in production. Where you do play not as Jesus, not even as God the Father, but I think I'm not sure if it takes place only in the New Testament era or if it like covers all of biblical history, but like you do play a character and you get to sort of experience the stories of the Bible through this game. I wish I had jotted it down in my notes, but I've been seeing it come up in my advertisements. That looks pretty fun.
When people make videos about Christian games, it's the kind of thing I've seen people say before. I remember this one video in particular, and I remember the comments in particular, because they really resonate with me, because the guy was going over the history of Christian games, and unfortunately, for the most part, Christian games, like Christian movies, are awful. The only people that go see Christian movies for the most part are Christians already. And they're usually as cheesy as can be. We have to cram the gospel in some way because, by golly, our audience is too stupid to understand it unless we spell it out explicitly. But our audience isn't reaching out. The only exception to this is Lee Strobhar's The Case for Christ movie. That one's even popular on Rotten Tomatoes. But then you compare it to, say, C.S. Lewis's The Chronicles of Narnia. Where even non-Christians enjoy reading those books. Or Lord of the Rings, which has a huge fandom today. What I remember what people were saying is, I would play Christian video games if they were fun. And, see, I think when Christians are making video games, what they need to emphasize the most is, will someone enjoy playing this game? And you don't even have to make it a Christian game. Just make it a fun game and let people know, oh, by the way, the people who make this are Christians. I think you'll have much more of an impact that way. There was a group out there called Level Up Church, and I talked to the pastor and he talked about they had introduced a patch of their own for a World of Warcraft version. I said, let me ask, did you make this a Christian version? He said, no, sir, not a bit. We made it a fun version. We just have a name, Level Up Church, right there. I think that's the way it should be, because that draws people in a whole lot more. Because if someone's playing a game and they think they're being preached to, they're not going to enjoy it.
Yeah, it reminds me, every time I think about this topic, it reminds me of a quote from Martin Luther where he said, the Christian shoemaker is not a shoemaker who puts little crosses on the shoes. He is a good shoemaker. That might be a paraphrase, but I think Martin Luther would say the same thing about movie makers and game makers. It's not just, you know, decorating it with little, you know, Christian bells and whistles, but it is it's making good content.
Yep.
The only area I think really escapes this problem is Christian music, but even that's like it depends on the group and it depends on the genre. So like groups like Skillet and Red, Demon Hunter, Disciple, like I think they make pretty good music, even when the gospel is in your face. And I think Skillet, what they do is they have like songs that are about their faith, sometimes explicitly and sometimes not explicitly, but then they have songs that are not theologically oriented at all, like some of like a lot of the songs on the Awake album, It's Not Me, It's You, You Should Have When You Could Have, Believe, which you would think a song titled Believe would be a faith-based song, but it's not. It's actually about it's actually about relationship struggles. Monster was really huge among non-Christian rock fans back in the late 2000s. And as far as movies goes, I think most of the good movies are ones that are based on the biblical narratives. I'm thinking like, you know, or it's not technically a movie, but it's the Bible, the epic miniseries, The Chosen. That's a good one. People may disagree with this, but I even like Exodus, Gods and Kings, starring Christian Bale. I liked that one. I was a little weirded out by God appearing as a human child while Moses was taking a mud bath. But other than that, it was a pretty good movie, in my opinion.
Well, first off, I'm not at all surprised. Skillet was the first group that you mentioned. I can't imagine why that would be. But yeah, I mean, there's also this theory I've heard that whenever you have a hero and a villain somewhere in there, you have the gospel. And even in superhero movies, the idea of self-sacrifice shows up so much. There's a reason someone like Superman is considered a Christ figure. And so many times in these movies and TV shows, when a hero dies, they die with their arms outstretched. There's a reason for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been thinking of maybe kind of taking that thesis and kind of putting more of a weeb spin on it, pointing out how many Christ figures there are in anime and manga. And, like, the first one that comes to mind is Naruto. I mean, if you look at Naruto and Jesus, there's many parallels there. I mean, Naruto has this person he loves, not romantically, although some shippers would disagree, but his friend, Sasuke, falls into darkness and evil, and Naruto, he dedicates his life to trying to bring him back to the Hidden Leaf Village, back from the dark side. His birth was even prophesied by, you know, one of the Toad Sages. And very special circumstances surrounding his birth. And he was hated by everybody in the Hidden Leaf Village. They turned their backs on him because he was what is called a Chinchuriki. He housed the spirit of the nine-tailed fox, and they were, you know, kind of afraid of him. So, and just like Jesus was hated by his enemies, by lots of people. They when a whole crowd decided to crucify him and release Barabbas. And after all of that, all is said and done, he revolutionized the world. And you go into Boruto, Naruto, Next Generations, and the world is just, like, so much better. I know that's a little bit off topic, but, like, I kind of see, and I could go on. I could talk about Ichigo Kurosaki in Bleach, and how Sosuke Aizen is kind of a Satan figure, and Ichigo is kind of the Christ figure who he sacrifices himself. In a way, he doesn't sacrifice his life, but he sacrifices his Soul Reaper powers to defeat him. It's just everywhere if you look for it.
Yeah, Evan, maybe that's the kind of research you could consider investing yourself in and maybe speaking at on sometimes if you ever get speaking engagements.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry, folks, for the bit of a rabbit trail. We went from one area of nerddom to another. But let's go to my next question here. On your YouTube channel, which is called The Gaming Theologian, you have a video called "What the Game Stray Teaches About God and Science." What is the game Stray, and what can it teach us about God and science?
Okay. Yeah, I remember seeing a clip of a game called Stray on, I think, the YouTube channel Outside Extra. And I saw your main character that you control is a cat. An ordinary cat. Like you, Evan, I am a cat lover. I'm looking down here every now and then because I've got little Shiro sleeping in his kitty bed. I can see him here. I can tell I'm really disturbing him by how much I'm speaking here. But I thought this is just such a clever idea. And for Christmas, some friends gave me a $25 gift card to both the Nintendo Switch eShop and the PlayStation Store. And Stray is on the PlayStation Store. It's also on Steam, if you want to get it that way, I think. But I went straight to the PlayStation Store. Cost $24.99. Boom, I'm getting that. Yes, you live life as a cat, jumping around from object to object, climbing and knocking objects off of high places, which, gosh, now I understand why that's so much fun for cats. And the thing that we learn is that it's set in a world where it's a sort of post-apocalyptic scenario. You don't see people. You see robots that have screens for faces. And these little creatures that pretty much destroy everything that comes around. And you do gain a little robot companion, but he's not really a fighter. Doing that. So usually you have to run from all these creatures. And later on, you have to hide in boxes when cameras come looking around. everywhere. And it's really a post, like I said, it's a post-apocalyptic scenario where people did something, it's not known what, that destroyed everything. And that got me thinking, isn't it strange that usually when science shows up in fiction, it doesn't turn out well for a lot of people. We see so many scenarios where we make something and we can't control it. Skynet, Ultron, HAL 9000, any of these number of things. And it becomes means to our destruction. The Matrix, and you could go on and on. And so many scientists today, it looks like they take the ideas that were done in science fiction and say, you know, I think we could do that. I think there was a scene from Curb Your Enthusiasm where some of the thing with an idea of having an open marriage, and the lady says, does it ever work? No, it never works. But people delude themselves into thinking that it could work. But it might work for us. And that's the thing going on. So, yeah, you learn about that. I think even here you have a scientific world, and yet there's still this huge problem going on. But science isn't the be-all and the end-all. And as for God, I think you learn a bit what it's like to think as if you were a cat to some extent, except you can't really think as a cat. You're still thinking as a human just using a cat. So that gets you into a good metaphysical question, because a cat's not going to go and say, let's see, I need to bring this item and get it over here and do this and then come over here. No, you're pretty much a cat with a human mind at this point. And that just gets you into metaphysics. But Stray is a very fun game. As soon as I finished it, I started going right back through it again. And I used a clip of it in my Defend talk, because at the beginning you see a scene where your main character, Cat, he jumps from one pipe to another following his other cat friends or family. And then the pipe starts to break and he goes falling down and you see his face and he's just going, trying to get back up to, but now he goes falling right down to the bottom. And I love the comment I saw on the trailer on a YouTube video where it says, 2022 Video Game Awards would be, yes, Elden Ring was a masterpiece in most every way, but that cat was so fluffy, though. It did win awards for Best Indie Game of the Year.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah. So, what are your thoughts on the claim that violence in video games is the cause of an increase in violence in the real world? It seems like every 3 months you turn on the news and see, oh, look, another school shooting. In fact, I think I've become a little bit desensitized to it. I mean, while I still have sympathy, it's no longer a shock. It's like, oh, look, there's another one. And some have argued that violent video games, and especially first-person shooter games, are the cause of this. What do you think? Is that true?
If this was the case, you would be seeing a whole lot more shootings going on than you do. Honestly, whenever a school shooting takes place, it's awful, but your kids have more chances of drowning in a bathtub than they do of dying in a school shooting. The problem in our culture is we take these anomalies, these exceptions, and we treat them as if they are normative, as if we can expect them to happen regularly, and we can't. And part of the problem is we look for the solution for a problem outside of ourselves. The problem is not violent video games. The problem is the hearts of people. Number one thing I would say going on that's influencing the hearts is fatherlessness in our societies. Too many people are growing up and they don't know who their father is. And that leaves a vacuum. And in a sense, they go on quest to show up their men. One of the great problems I think we have in our society is men and women have no quest to know that they have reached a point of manhood or womanhood. It seems odd to me, like, well, you turn 18 and you're an adult. big whoop. You survived 18 years, like about, 98% of people in this country do. Congratulations. Is it any wonder some people join gangs and things like that, or they explore sexually? Because by golly, if you make love to a member of the opposite sex, you must be a man or you must be a woman. The interesting also is if you look at, say, Virginia Tech shooting, something that was found is that if there was anything different about the shooter in that case, it was that he didn't play video games. Normally when you went to the college, video games are one of the main social activities that's done on campus together. This guy wasn't playing games with anyone else, which was showing he was a social outcast from the beginning. And lo and behold, that's someone who does these kinds of things. The real research on this is not there. What they've done sometimes is tested for something called aggression and asked questions like, well, would you be willing to put hot sauce on someone's food? As if that was an act of aggression. And that's a serious question they asked, and I'm thinking, I could be tempted to pour hot sauce on someone's food, not because I'm aggressive, because I want to pour a funny prank on them. Why not?
Yeah.
There are some great books on this one. Grand Theft Childhood did a lot of research on this. MatPat on YouTube in Game Theory has done a lot of research on this too. And the first book I really read on this was called Moral Combat: Why the War on Violent Video Games is Wrong. Part of me, I think we're looking for a scapegoat, because if we can find something else out there, we don't have to change our own behavior. No, we have met the enemy. He is us. And I still say one of the best things you can do to help kids today, especially, give them their father and their mother in a loving home together. Fatherlessness, if anything, is the real problem here.
Yeah, and that's not the kind of message that people want to hear. Yeah, it's a lot easier to just say, well, people would just stop playing those video games. It's always been like this, you know. And especially within the church, you know, I lament over the fact that, you know, satanic panic is something that's not just a thing that was in the 80s. I mean, it is here today. I saw a TikTok where this guy was, he was throwing away all of his Pokemon games because supposedly God had told him to do it because they were satanic, and he'd been playing them for like 2 decades. And I'm just like, and the reasoning he was giving was just spurious, as spurious can be. But the church and the world likes to do this. You know, if you've got, it's that rock music, it's that Dungeons and Dragons games, it's those video games, it's this or it's that, and everybody wants to blame something other than what the real problem is.
Yeah, first off, always be on guard when someone says, God told me. Whenever I hear someone say, my red flags go up immediately, because you hear so much nonsense following, unfortunately. But secondly, in church, here's the basic answer. We follow our marching orders. We do the Great Commission. We do real evangelism. We preach real sermons and answer real questions. We give our youth groups more than just laser tag and pizza parties and, yes, video games. We give them real answers to their real questions, and we give them a real substantial worldview. I expect the world is going to be living like the world. The problem is, the church is not busy being the church.
Amen. How would you counsel those who have like a genuine addiction to video games? What I mean by this is that like they game to the exclusion of everything else. Should they give up? Should they be like an alcoholic? Like how an alcoholic just completely gives up alcohol, they just completely give up gaming altogether? Or are there like tactics they can employ to so they can still do the thing they love, but do it in a more healthy way?
I think that the book is called The Gaming Mind by a guy named Alexander Putz, I think is his name. And he talks about this kind of topic. As far as I know, there's no real category yet for video game addiction. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's not easy to diagnose. And he talked about someone who seemed to be addicted to Candy Crush. And she was wanting to play it constantly. And it'd be a quick fix to say, okay, delete it from your phone. But instead, he took a different approach and said, why are you playing this game? What are you getting out of it? And it took several sessions together. And finally, she realized what was going on. Now she plays the game normally, like most anyone else would. Back at past the addiction, when we see someone addicted to something, we need to ask, ultimately, I think, why are they addicted to it? What are they looking for? Because if we remove the object of their affection and we don't give them something worthwhile in its place, they'll find another addiction. They'll go to something else. And of course, some things do need to be stopped cold turkey. If you got, say, a heroin addiction, yes, you definitely need to get help with that. But you can have work addiction. If you go by the standard, you could have the same thing with sports. You could have the same thing with television. You could have the same thing with religion. To explain that, yes, it's good for you to be doing ministry many times, but if you're doing ministry and you're neglecting your family, you're not really serving God the way you should. Because your first call is to your family. And so if I met someone like that, I'd want to get to know the person first. I want to say, why are you doing this? What are you hoping to get out of gaming? Do you want your life to be more than just gaming? I love gaming, but I want my life to be more than that. I don't want it to be just people look at me at the end and say, well, he sure knew how to play a game well. Nah, I don't want to be remembered saying, he sure changed a lot of lives out there on his path. He sure served the kingdom of God well. So when I meet someone like that, I want to find out what's going on. Because many times, there just aren't quick and easy solutions to problems. You have to work them in. So I recommend people read The Gaming Mind. Great book.
Okay, who's the author of that?
I think it's Alexander Putz. You can check on that. I'll go ahead and check right now here, in fact.
Okay.
Alexander Chris. Chris.
Alexander Chris. Okay, I thought it was, I'm like, if Alexander Pruss wrote a book on video games, I would have thought I would have heard about it. I'll include the link to that and the other ones that you mentioned in the episode link, the episode description of this podcast episode. Now, how is Christianity the ultimate quest? You talk about this in you mentioned this in your talk that you gave at Defend last year, the Christianity being the ultimate quest.
Yeah. The reason we are all here really is to fulfill purpose. We are here to serve the kingdom of God and to bring God glory. That is our quest, that is our goal, that is why we are here. You look at John Walton's The Lost World, Genesis 1, we are put here to represent God, to rule the world on his behalf. And we failed miserably. And Jesus is the one who's come to rightfully rule. Yet, we're still a part of the story. Every single one of us is here, and we're not accidents. We're here for a reason. And our quest is to find out what that reason is and fulfill it. And scripture tells us, you know, when someone tells me, oh, I wonder what God's will is for my life, I'd say, look, I'll tell you God's will for your life right now. In heaven, if you're wondering what God's will for your life is, I can tell you what it is right now. It's very easy. You want to know?
Sure.
Conform you to the likeness of Christ. That's it. It's like, well, what about my job? What about who I marry? What about, you got a lot of freedom in those areas. you're being conformed to the likeness of Christ. Everywhere. And we live in a world, man, where we see evil all around us in many ways. I mean, look what's being done to children today. Things we never would have dreamed of when we were in school. I mean, Evan, can you seriously imagine that when you were in high school, there would be a debate on whether or not boys could be allowed into the girls' locker room?
No. And by the way, for those who are wondering, I was of high school age in the mid-2000s, like 2006, 2007, 2008, just 15 years ago. I mean, the world has, and its values, just within my short lifetime, has changed dramatically.
Yep. This is the world we are in. There's real evil out there, and unfortunately too many people aren't really paying attention to the real evil as well. In the game Final Fantasy 15, you control Prince Noctis and his three friends, and the scenarios are very lifelike. So you go through a restaurant, and you hear people just talking about everyday things around them. And yet the interesting thing is, the Empire taking over the world shows up in the news and media, that people are just talking about everything else. And I would love to see Christians going out there on the front lines more and more and saying, no, we're not going to let this happen to our world. We're not going to let our children have their bodies mutilated. We're not going to let you redefine marriage. We're not going to let you destroy the family. We're not going to let you cure babies in the womb. And I'm not saying do something violent or anything like that, of course, but I am saying stand up and don't be ashamed of Jesus in this day and age, because the gospel is the only hope the world has. There's nothing else that can save the world but the message of Jesus Christ. We have to go out there and get like, we are all part of a team in this RPG that we're involved in. We all have to work together to do our parts. And I think this is one of the great things about the internet. So many of us who would have never met, most likely in real life, can be connected regularly. I mean, heck, even if you and I are connected quite regularly on here, odds are the only way we could have met is we might have bumped into one another at a conference and then maybe called each other every now and then, if we even got to that point. But because of the internet, we're able to share a lot more.
Yeah, exactly.
So we have the means to fulfill our mission. What we need is the will to fulfill our mission. I think if we treat it like a quest and realize there are benefits, great benefits in the kingdom of God if we win the game, we're more prone to do that.
Yeah. Before we wrap up the show, how about we just talk about some of the recent games that we have played?
Uh-huh.
So for me, like, Pokemon Home has finally been updated, and I've been able to bring in my old Pokemon from the past games that I've accumulated them in. I've got a Pikachu named after Veronica Taylor that I've had since I was 13. I caught her on Emerald version, and she's finally in Generation 9. So I've been kind of doing the champion of the region Gita in the post game wants the player to like re-challenge the gyms to see if they're like up to snuff. And what I've been doing is I've been just making monotype teams, the same types that the gym leaders use. So if I'm going up against a water type gym leader, I'll use water type Pokemon. If I'm going up against a grass type gym leader, I'll use grass type Pokemon, and so on. And that's to make it more of a challenge. Yeah. My rule is they can't be like above 70, because if I go in there with level 100, I'm just going to steamroll everything. But they all have to be of the same type. And I've actually had a bit of a hard time with a couple of them. I mean, Larry, man, of course, normal type gym leaders are like overpowered anyway. Anybody who's taken on Whitney or Norman can tell you that. But I had to battle him like four or five times. So, because Basically, I am so good at Pokemon battles now. Like, I am handy. I'm like Kenpachi Zaraki. I handicap myself to make it more of a challenge. And I've just been going in there with my old some old Pokemon and some new Pokemon. And I will make a few exceptions. Like, if I don't have, like, I had, like, very few normal types. I would have had more, but, you know, the Dexit issue, couldn't transfer Pokemon like Snorlax. And so I made a few exceptions to the typing rule if I don't have enough to make it at least four, but I've been enjoying that. So what game have you been playing recently?
Yeah, the main games I play, I still do some of Animal Crossing every day just because I'm a completionist and I want to do everything on it. I also do Final Fantasy 14, which has just received a new patch update, so it had some new quests come out, and I've really liked how now it's leaning a lot on Final Fantasy 4, which is my favorite Final Fantasy. I do have the entire collection of Final Fantasy Pixar remasters. I was going through that, but then I paused because Tears of the Kingdom came out. I've been going through Tears of the Kingdom. It's definitely a challenge. I mean, we're not talking something easy like the Dancing Dragon Dungeon. This is definitely a challenge. I play maybe an hour or 2 hours every night. And you really do have to use your mind and think a lot, especially when you get to the shrines, to figure out all the puzzles that are in there. And I typically try my best to not look up answers. Every day I can be solving. Okay, here's what I saw in this shrine. How do I figure out this puzzle? I was playing a part of a game yesterday that involved you having to get up to something in the sky and jumping high on various things over and over. And honestly, the game is so realistic, I was thinking, don't look down, don't look down, don't look down. It does that good a job. I mean, on my phone, I play Pokemon Go, play Words with Friends. I still do the Worder every day. And I do Final Fantasy Brave Exvius.
Nice. Yeah, I'm playing Pokemon Go too. I'm trying to play catch up because for most of Pokemon Go's run, I had a pretty lousy phone. But last year I finally got a good phone that could run it and didn't overheat and lag like crazy. So now I'm playing catch up, and I'm really hoping they have another Bulbasaur Community Day, because I want to evolve my Ivysaur into Venusaur. He's been an Ivysaur forever.
Yeah, I'm also going through Dragon Quest XI. I think I've heard that one has a lot of good imagery in it, so I'm going through that one as well. And you mind, while I'm doing this, I'm usually listening to something as well, because you know, that's a great way to prioritize my time. I've listened to audiobooks while playing video games before.
So before we go, is there any? Would you like to plug some of your website's stuff?
Well, before we go, I also still want to show everyone, but I do still affirm the virgin birth, in case anyone's wondering. I hadn't said it in a while, so I was thinking some people could be questioning, wondering if I still affirm a virgin birth, which I do affirm. So yeah, you all can know that I do still affirm a virgin birth. But I blog 5 days a week at deeperwatersapologetics.com, and I have a YouTube channel, Gaming Theologian. And if I get enough income coming in, enough donations, I do want to start up my podcast again someday. I haven't been able to do that in a while, especially ever since everything happened with the divorce and things like that. But I'm still very interested in doing that, so you can find me at both sites. And heck, if you play on the Switch or the PlayStation, send me a friend code. Pokemon Go, send me a friend code. Find me on Final Fantasy 14. I'd love to have more friends on there. And keep doing your reading, keep doing your studying, and play to win.
Amen. Well, thank you for listening to the Cerebral Faith Podcast. I would like to give a shout-out to my patrons, Danny Lozano, O.C. Jones, Andrew Melnick, Red Blade Flame, David Shannon, Marcy Schlaufman, David Parrish, Slam RN, Nathan Hamilton, Danny Whitaker, Brandon Whitaker, and that's it. The list repeats after that for some reason. If you would like to become a Cerebral Faith patron, go to www.patreon.com/cerebralfaith. Just on the $3 tier alone, I mean, you'll get these benefits. You'll get early access to the blog posts, early access to the podcast episodes. You'll get early access to the you'll get shout outs on the podcast, and you'll get all of the books that I've written in digital form. That's just the $3 tier, never mind the $20 tier. So if you'd like to get some goodies, some of these you can get like way, way, way in advance, depending on how much content I create in one sitting. Like the recent Gospel Reliability blog post series, I've made blog articles, very lengthy, in-depth essays that I put on the blog, as well as doing a audio, sort of an audiobook, audio blog that has gone up here on the podcast for the past 11 episodes. So, like, if you're a Cerebral Faith patron, like, you could potentially get content 2 months in advance. 2 months, 2 weeks, 2 days. So that's just something to think about. And it helps the ministry. It helps to get funding. Thank you for listening to the Cerebral Faith Podcast. Peace out, God bless, and keep using the brains that God gave you.